Guardian Unlimited.
Hello, my name's Claire Armistead. I'm the literary editor of The Guardian. One of my jobs is to longlist for the first book prize, and we are now coming to the very end of the process. In fact, the prize giving is tonight. The last and the final shortlisted person we're interviewing is, in fact, the winner, Dina Mengustu. Congratulations, Dina.
Thank you very much, Claire.
You've won with Children of the Revolution, which is a story of immigrants living in Washington. I think for people who haven't had a chance to read this yet, it would be nice if you could possibly start with a reading.
Sure, my pleasure. The scene I'm going to read now is where the narrator, Sefa Stefanos, is leaving his store with his two African friends, Joseph from the Congo and Kenneth from Kenya, and they are driving in Washington, D.C. to end their night at a small dark bar. We decide to end our evening at a small, dark, crowded bar on the northwest edge of the city. The crowd tonight is mixed. A half dozen Nigerians, all friends with the owner, are pressed up against the bar, loudly ordering drinks and shots for one another. At the other end is an old white man with a beer drinking slowly by himself. Scattered throughout the booths and tables in the back are a couple dozen young white kids, the first to live in this neighborhood in 30 years. Kenneth and I slide into a booth and begin to drink. Joseph goes to the back of the bar and puts a dollar into the jukebox. We've been waiting for this moment to one degree or another since our first drink of the night. It takes about 15 more minutes before the song begins, and with the first chord, we raise our glasses and toast. When the refrain starts, the three of us lean forward and sing along. But you won't fool the children of the revolution. No, you won't fool the children of the revolution. Over and over, until the song ends, by which point we've all finished our drinks and are ready for another. The first time we heard that song, we were sitting two booths farther back. We still worked at the Capitol Hotel. Joseph and Kenneth were sharing an apartment just a few blocks away from the bar. The song played, and Joseph stood up drunkenly and declared, "That is us. We are the children of the revolution." His accent was heavier then, weighted with tinges of French that struggled under a formal locution to come through. It took him several tries before we understood what he was saying, each attempt punctuated by an emphatic thrust toward the air holding the music, and in holding the music, holding Joseph as well. When we finally did understand him, Kenneth and I stood up, and together the three of us nodded our heads to the words we barely understood, the refrain repeating its unintended sympathies over and over. Now, when the song is over, it's hard not to laugh at our misplaced enthusiasm. We had been in America for only a couple of years when we first heard it, and we did believe that we were children of a revolution. And not only because we were willing to be grand. We all had stories of families we missed and would never see again. We spoke in our broken English of Africa's tyrannies, which had yet to grow tedious, and we had our own stories of death and violence to match. The song plays two more times over the course of the next 2 hours, and each time, like children being coaxed into a conversation, we sing along.
A typical night in the life of Sefa, Joseph and Kenneth, who are the three central characters of the novel. And that particular extract shows at least where the title of the book came from, but I think it's not the same. The title's different in the States, is that right?
Yeah, in the States the title is actually The Beautiful Things That Heaven Bears, which never quite rolls off of your tongue as nicely as you would like it to.
And where does that one come from?
Joseph, who's the character from the Congo, has sort of grand aspirations of becoming a poet one day, and he decides that the last few lines of the Inferno from Dante are the most perfect lines of poetry ever written, and they go through a round aperture. I saw appear some of the beautiful things that heaven bears, and he latches onto those lines as being the most perfect lines of poetry, and that lines of poetry that only an African could understand, because they're exactly what he lived through in Africa, that they were, for all the sort of tragedy and suffering that was around him, there's always a sense of a greater beauty waiting to in the future.
So these are very cultivated characters. They talk about Dostoevsky and Dante. They have a huge range of cultural reference, which is at odds with their lives. I mean, their lives are actually quite sort of sad and abandoned.
They're all interesting. I mean, what's sort of like interesting in me about them is that they're all characters who are immigrants, but were sort of involuntary immigrants for the most part. Sefa leaves Ethiopia because of the revolution, and he comes from a very privileged upper class background. And Joseph leaves the Congo for similar reasons after the fall of Mobutu, and again coming from a fairly upper class background. And what they end up finding in America is that their lives are kind of stuck and are sort of not able to realize their full ambitions, and they instead turn to books and they turn to literature as a sort of solace and comfort for them.
And Sefer, in particular, runs a corner shop, which is going to the bad, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a small little grocery store in a fairly run-down neighborhood in Washington, D.C. that's was historically very poor and African-American, and now that it's the neighborhood's on the verge of change and gentrification, it's suddenly in a very perilous position.
And he's from Ethiopia, and your background is Ethiopian. How important is that, is the Ethiopian-ness of it, as opposed to the other characters who are from Congo and Kenya, it is, isn't it?
Ethiopia is obviously definitely an enormous part of my identity, and of course, Seifa's, and he leaves Ethiopia because of the political revolution that forced my family out of Ethiopia. But I don't necessarily think it's the thing that holds the book together, of course. I think what really holds the book together is that sense of displacement and loneliness that is, you know, common to immigrants, but I think also a pretty general theme that most people experience in their lives, whether they're emigrating from one country to another or whether they've always been inside their own home.
What age were you when you left, or your family left Ethiopia?
I was only two, actually. So for me, I mean, everything that sort of Seifa experiences in Ethiopia is entirely my imagination, and a few pieces are actually things that I've sort of learned over the years through research or through interviews with members of my family.
Did you go back to Ethiopia to research it?
No, I never went back to Ethiopia until the book was actually done. So it'd been 25 years before I finally returned, and by that point I actually just finished the novel, and it was kind of interesting to see how much my sort of imagination of Addis as a city lined up with the books. And I was happy to find that most of the time, you know, you hear stories and it's just enough for you to sort of create your own version of a city.
Yeah, yeah. Now, there's another story which is going on underneath, which collides in a way with this story of these three characters, which is the gentrification of the neighbourhood they're living in. It's a bit of a slum, isn't it, with boarded up houses, and suddenly sort of richer people, white people, are moving in. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, Seifa's been living in this neighborhood in D.C. for about 17 years, and as you said, it has been an historically poor neighborhood with a lot of prostitution. And one day, you know, the neighborhood does slowly start to change, and Judith, a white woman, moves into the house next door and, you know, builds it up and restores the house so it becomes suddenly grand and beautiful again. And that kind of sets off a lot of tension inside of the neighborhood, because it does signal a real change, and also all the sort of issues that come up as a result of class and race suddenly get drawn into the book.
And one of the things that all the judges and also the Waterstones reading groups really admired about this novel was the restraint with which you write, that these big things happen. He falls in love, he gets abandoned, his life's going to pieces, but it's written in this sort of meticulously, almost like colourless way, deliberately. Talk a bit about that. How did you get to that economy? That's very rare in a first novel.
I think, you know, I wanted, because I knew there was a fair amount of tragedy and sorrow inside of the book, and I wanted that to come out as sort of controlled as possible, because I think it's also easy to, especially with sort of migrant characters, to kind of over-dramatize what's actually happened to them. I mean, not that it's, and their narrative is already dramatic enough, I think, in a lot of instances. And so for me to actually be able to kind of express that sort of tragedy and that sorrow, but without reducing it into kind of a cliche and without making it seem like it's, you know, it can almost become, I think, overly simplified if it gets kind of overly magnified. And Seifa himself as a narrator is also a narrator to me that's, you know, his dignity comes from kind of his restraint and his ability to sort of deal with life over 17 years and to kind of sustain his life in America is kind of built on this idea of you know, really tight control over his emotions and over his life.
Mm. I said colourless, which actually is completely wrong, because there's a lot of humour in it.
Yes, I think there's a lot of humour. Yeah.
I mean, talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of the... There's, you know, Seifa has a really close relationship with Joseph from the Congo and Kenneth from Kenya, and the three of them, I think, have a really... you know, the game that they play with, they play a game involving where one person names a dictator in Africa's history and they have to guess the year the person came to power in the country. And there's a certain humor to the game, of course. I think it's a very kind of dark, funny game for them, but it's also a game born out of a lot of frustration and anger at Africa's political history. But I think the humor is necessary to them. It's necessary to the game. It's also necessary to their interactions, because it's, for all their kind of, you know, sadness and loneliness and frustrations in life, they also do all come together and mock each other and ridicule one another in a way that reveals both who they are and also that makes fun of America at the same time. It's and I liked that. I think they needed that as characters.
And mocked France as well, actually.
they mocked France, mocked pretty much every colonial power. So, yeah.
So how did you get to the stage of writing such an accomplished first novel? Did you go to a writing course?
I was straight from, you know, I began writing when I was, you know, in high school, so 15, 16. And when I was in college, I wrote another, first book that was terrible and was lucky enough to sort of get that over with and put it underneath my bed. And then afterwards, I went to a writing course at Columbia University. But the book actually didn't, I didn't write the book while I was in a writing course. It sort of, you know, 2 years after I was out of Columbia's graduate program in writing, I began to write the book then. And I think it was really nice actually have had the chance to write constantly for 2 years and to read a lot during 2 years and then to actually work on something that was mine and completely independent of a writing program.
And it just took 2 years, this novel?
No, it took about 2.5
That's
two,
very quick.
2.5 years. Well.
And what will this prize mean to you? It's your first prize, is it, so far?
There's been a few other prizes in France and in the States.
Uh-huh.
But it's a very unique prize in that it's entirely from any book published in the UK. So it brings together poetry and fiction and nonfiction all at the same time. And that's and looking at the long list and the short list, there's a sort of an incredible breadth of works that were I was up against, and I'm still very stunned to have actually won as a result of that. So there is something incredible about that to me, that that it's literature as a whole and not, you know, sort of being partitioned off from one category to another, but that we're all sort of taking this body of work and seeing how we kind of interpreted and understood the world.
Mm. And I think that a lot of the judges and the readers felt, although I shouldn't really speak for them, but what came across was that it was felt to be a very big story and an important story. So are you going to find it intimidating now, writing your next?
Hopefully not. The next one, you know, I've been writing, the book has been done for almost 2 years now, I think. So fortunately, in that sort of quiet time before the book actually comes out and you're kind of actually having to worry about how the book is being received, there was at least about a year and a half of real quiet that I actually got to start the second novel. So, and it's coming along pretty well, actually, I think. So I keep a pretty good distance away from most things that happen around the book, and I kind of retreat to my own little private place.
So. You actually managed to keep a private place. You're not being bussed off, flown off all around the world.
I do get flown off around a lot these days, but I've left the States to get even a little bit more privacy, and so I'm living in Paris where I really don't even speak the language that well. So there's, even if I have to kind of travel around a lot when I'm just by myself, which is most of the time anyway, I can't even really talk to anybody. So it's a real, definitely real form of solitude I've managed to find now.
Well, thank you very much for coming in and congratulations. Well,
thank you very much.
And Children of the Revolution is published by Cape. Guardian Unlimited.